This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
I live in top of hip hop. This is hip hop of the day. I give props to hip hop, so hip hop parade. Hey, ho, hey, ho, hey, ho, hey, ho, hip hop parade.
Bleck and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. You can watch us on Twitch tonight. Check out the channel, ESPN 1000 Chicago. You can also join the conversation at 312-332-3776. All right, here's what I'm looking at, Abdallah. Three things that I thought before we were going into The Last Dance that I feel like were confirmed after we saw these episodes.
Jordan was good at basketball.
Okay, number one.
Confirmed.
Jordan, the best ever. And I know that that's not a hot take. That's not something that's like crazy to think of. But heading into the doc, I always thought that Michael was the best. Mm-hmm. But I think what this confirms, I feel like what the documentary has confirmed for all of us, and maybe there's LeBron guys out there, maybe there's Kobe guys out there who say that
there's always Kobe guys.
My guy's the best. My LeBron James is the best. Those people are out there. I wonder if now they see what they saw in The Last Dance and they say, okay, you know what? I didn't realize Jordan before 91 how good he was. Because I think that's the mistake people make. The mistake people make is they say, who's the best ever, Michael or LeBron? And then they say, well, let's think back to Michael. And all they think back to is a slow, broken down, end of the career, 98, Jordan, just getting through those games, just getting through, and with his cunning and guile, just figuring it out, being better at basketball than everyone else, but not necessarily more talented when it comes to athleticism or the straight skill set that others at the time had. And they see that, and they see LeBron and what LeBron did in 2016 and how LeBron is still in his prime and he's above 30 and what LeBron's doing. And they say, well, you know what? You look at the two guys and yeah, Mike's cool with the 6-0. But LeBron's done this, and look at these stats in 17 years and all this stuff. And it's like you kind of have to go back before the 96, 97, 98 titles to kind of get to wrap your head around this idea that Michael Jordan's the best ever, and there's no comparable person to it because of how great he was at the end of the 80s and into the early 90s.
I think that it goes back to, you know, you look at the episodes that focused on the Pistons and what they were doing to Jordan and how he came back from that and the rules now and the way the game was played in the 90s and the way the game is played now and the hand check rule and all that. And the fact that if Michael played now with these rules, and I'm not talking about the three-point line. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about with just the defensive rules and the fact that you can, if you get punched, if you punch a dude, you actually get a foul as opposed to being able to stay in the game and stuff, right? So I feel like if he played in the era of no hand check and all that kind of stuff, he would be even better. He would have been even better because of the abuse he took from the Pistons, you know, from the Knicks, all that kind of stuff. So I think that if he could have played, he could have averaged even more points. He would have been even better defensively. He would have had all those opportunities because he didn't play dirty defense. You know, you don't see the opposite. You don't see the, oh, well, you hit me, I'm going to hit you back.
Right.
You don't see that from Jordan. He had guys around him that would do that. You know, he had Horace Grant. He had Rodman with the second three-peat. But ultimately, Jordan wasn't the guy that was going to knock you down if you knocked him down. He was going to make the shot in your face. So to that point, being that he didn't have to fight fire with fire, he just fought it with firepower. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like, he would just be like, okay, fine, you're going to hit me, I'm still going to score. It doesn't matter. Hit me as much as you want to. The ball's going in. It doesn't matter. So if he had the opportunity, he'd be that much better. And LeBron gets to do it with all those rules already in place. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys that, oh, it's soft. It's soft. People are still hitting at him. Like, people are still going at him. It's just not as hard as it used to be.
Yeah, right. And you can also look at that day and age and say, well, you know, yes, they did play tougher defense, or maybe they were more physical on defense. But also, when you have eight dudes standing in the paint,
yeah,
it's tough to get to the basket. You watch a game in 2019, 2020, and the entire court is spread out. It's a different thing. It is tougher to play defense because you have to move more. Mm-hmm. It may not be more physical. So that's number one, is Jordan is the best ever. And I hope that after people see this documentary, they say, okay, I get it. I get why everyone tells me that Michael Jordan is the best ever. So three things that I thought before the doc that I feel like they were confirmed throughout the doc. Number two, they didn't have to break it up. Blame the Jerrys. That's my thought that was heading into the documentary. And I feel like that has been cemented now after seeing eight of the episodes hang into 9 and 10, that really the thing that's strange about this whole situation is that you get two star players who wanted to continue to play together. In NBA history, we see stars who want to leave. LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Shaquille O'Neal, Kevin Durant. Go through NBA history. The reason great teams get broken up in the last 25 years, it's because the stars want to leave. In this situation, the star of stars wanted to stay. He wanted to play in Chicago. He wanted to be here. That is the battle in the current landscape of the NBA. The current battle now is getting your stars to be happy where they're at. And then once they're happy where they're at, hopefully 6 months from then, they are still happy. And a year from then, they are still happy. And they're not forcing their way to a different team to play with someone else. The key here, and what I thought heading into the doc, was that this team wanted to be together. The Jerrys are the ones that broke it up. And they should get the blame for this. And it's confirmed after seeing the doc.
It's definitely both Jerrys, but you look at Jerry Krause and wanting to get rid of Phil Jackson, you know, right away after the first championship. And every year since then, you know, moving forward up until the sixth championship, wanting to get rid of Phil Jackson, wanting to trade Scotty, wanting to move on and try to break it down and rebuild it again because he thought he deserved more credit because he wasn't getting the credit for putting together this great dynasty. You know, you got lucky that Jordan fell to you, right? Like that's you got lucky. Yeah, you made some great moves. But ultimately, if you didn't have Michael Jordan, if the Rockets wanted Jordan, what, you get Hakeem and you still probably would have been okay.
Would have been pretty good.
Would have been pretty good. I don't know if they would have won six, but they would have been pretty good. Because Jordan was better than Hakeem.
Oh, yeah, for okay. sure. But Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, if you look at players in the 90s, late 80s into the 90s,
for sure.
He's in right like your handful of Absolutely. Individuals that you would select as the best player in the league.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the fact that he wanted to stop it, like, wouldn't, if you're the GM of a team that just keeps cranking it out, wouldn't you just sit there and let it be? Like, I know you want to retool and you want to get new role players and fresh blood in there and all that kind of stuff, but ultimately, you let your star shine instead of trying to tear it down and ruin it just because you want to prove you can build it again. That doesn't mean anything. This is an inception. We're not just building little neighborhoods left and right. We're not just going through and building worlds. You're building a championship. You're building a franchise. The players win the championships, not the organization, the players.
Well, and I hope that if we're ever lucky enough to have a dynasty again in this city, that we understand that you should probably put as much as you can into it to let it ride until it can't ride anymore. And I feel like that's what we've seen with the Blackhawks over the course of the last 2 years, right? I mean, they were unwilling to remove these star individuals off the team. And basically, you have the stars in the sweater for their careers. Mm-hmm. But basically, you have a team that's missed the playoffs in consecutive years. And now you have to rebuild with high-priced talent who can't get it done anymore at the level that they did. I know that Patrick Kane is still playing at an elite level in the National Hockey League. But, you know, the combination of paying Taves, Keith, Seabrook, mm-hmm. Kane, all these individuals, that price, that like, yeah, that's what the Blackhawks did. And then you finally get to a point where you say, okay, it's over. You lost it. But in the Bulls situation, they never got that chance because the decision was made for them by Jerry Reinsdorf, by Jerry Krause, because they wanted to start anew. And, you know, it's almost what we are seeing right now. We're going to see in the next year or two with the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah.
That team was supposed to be a dynasty team. They get one championship in 2016. They've already said sayonara to the manager, right? Joe Maddon's out on the coast, and he's with the Angels. So now the next thing that will go are some of the pieces from that championship team if you can't get it done in this baseball season. So that's number two. Number two is that they didn't have to break it up. And it boggles my mind that 1998 was so long ago, yet it's so obvious that the two best players, you could argue the two best players in the league, I know that Pippen necessarily wasn't number two. There's a few you could throw in there, but two of the five best players in the league wanted to continue to play together and wanted to be on this team. Yet you, as an organization, decided, no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a Bulls fan, that's something that should still bother you to this day. And I get it. And listen, if we play this forward, I find it very unlikely that in 1999, the Chicago Bulls would have won a seventh title. And if you really want to get into it, you go back and watch those games in the Eastern Conference Finals in 1998 and in the Finals in 98. That team was on its last legs.
Dude, Jordan was
that was
dying.
It. What Jordan did against the Jazz in that Finals was that's why he is a hero and why he's that Superman-level person, because he wasn't the same player. Mm-hmm. He still won.
Like, you got to realize dude was in his mid-30s.
Oh, yeah, but like it was just different. His body was different. Because you can make the argument LeBron's in his mid-30s. He's still in his prime. But like, it is – when you watch Jordan in the 98 Finals, that's not the old Jordan.
Yeah, but
LeBron – and they still got it done.
LeBron isn't smoking cigars in between his workout in the morning and the game in the afternoon.
LeBron also didn't take – what, 18 months off
of course.
Not playing basketball?
Of course.
You know, he has had his body in shape the entire time.
Absolutely.
All right, three things I thought heading into the doc that I feel like are confirmed now after seeing eight episodes. Listen, heading into the doc, I thought the only reason this was being made, this was being released, was because LeBron James and the Golden State Warriors were getting really close. And I get it. Mark Vansell was on with Cap the other day, and he shot down the idea that Jordan would want to release this because LeBron got a title in 2016. But Jordan Hare was on with you guys on Waddle and Sylvie, and he said that this whole process started the day after LeBron won the title in 2016. And I thought heading into it that the only reason Jordan was okay with this was because LeBron is getting close with his four MVPs, his three NBA championships, and the 17-year career of statistics that he's putting up, and the Golden State Warriors as one of the best teams ever in history. I get it. 73-9, they did not win the championship that year. But if you take the two seasons back-to-back, the 73-9 season and the championship before that, that Warriors team is one of the best teams to ever play in the league. That team got close to the Jordan Bulls, and LeBron's getting close to Jordan. Therefore, you get the doc. And after seeing the movie and seeing how competitive MJ is and how much he cares, I think it confirms it. I think he wanted this done to say, here's the final hammer. I'm the best. Here's the footage.
So I look at this the way when Draymond called Kevin Durant when they lost to the Heat or to the Cavs, to LeBron.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. To LeBron in that game seven of the finals, right? And he called him and he's like, man, we need you. We wouldn't have lost if we had you. You could come win with us. I feel like that's how as soon as LeBron won another title, as soon as the Warriors broke the 72-win record, that Jordan picked up his phone and just sent out the alert, release the tapes. Like, it's on.
That's what it was.
And because he's been, listen, Chris, you painted a great picture of Jordan's greatness and his want to know about this. It's broken down into two words. He's petty. He's petty.
Oh,
and we
for
know
sure.
He's petty. Everything about this, he wants to prove if Jordan is Durant's burners before there were Durant's burners. Like, he wants to prove everybody wrong. He wants to say, no, I'm the best. Oh, you think this guy's good now? This guy's the young up-and-comer? Oh, no. Oh, you think Tony Kukoc is going to come in here and make us better? No, guess what? We're going to stop him, and we're going to make him contemplate playing basketball ever again. And he showed up in the next game. Oh, you think you're better than me? You think your teams were better than our teams? Okay, release the tapes. Release the tape. I got receipts. I got them. Let's just show them.
And that's what this is.
And we
this is a 10-part here. Release the tapes.
Dude, we haven't even seen a fraction of the footage that we could be seeing.
Yeah, I know.
A fraction.
I mean, they were with them the entire season. So Black and Abdallah here with you here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. If you want to talk about the NBA, about Michael Jordan, are you a LeBron guy? Are you finally coming around to the idea that Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time? We'll take your calls at 312-332-3776. It's Black and Abdallah.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Do you think baseball players want to come back and play?
Do you like getting paid?
Yeah, no, I think I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think they like getting paid?
I don't know. I think at their price. Right? Like isn't that kind
do you want to get paid?
Yeah, but it seems like baseball players have a lot of like everything has to be perfect for me to get paid.
What has to be perfect? They want their money that they were promised.
Okay, but here's the thing. The whole conversation that's taken place this week about Major League Baseball players and the owners and the information that's been out there and the suggestion from the owners to the players that they'll split 50-50 on the revenue for this season, this 2020 season, whatever it take place. I feel like the conversation has been twisted in a whole bunch of different ways. One being, like, I get it. If you've already agreed to play at the price reduction,
yeah,
and that's what took place, and the owners come back and say, well, actually we want to reduce it more, then the solution baseball players should say, well, we already agreed, so we are ready to play today, you just have to set this up for us.
Yeah, hell no.
Why has that not happened yet?
Because they don't want it, because the owners don't want to take any more losses. The billionaires don't want to take any more losses. Look, I get it. I understand if you work at a job and you've been furloughed and your company says, look, we'll bring you back, but we're all like, you work for a small company. We're not talking about small companies here. We're talking about billionaire owners. And here's the thing. They bought these teams. They don't have, this isn't a young upstart company that becomes Amazon, okay? These are billionaires that own teams. And if they want to sell them, they can, and the next billionaire will come along and buy it. I don't feel bad for billionaires. You agreed to it. You agreed to something. Because the other problem is, when the going gets good, they don't share that wealth. You don't get extra money because we sign new TV deals. You don't get extra money because we sold out our ballparks. You don't get extra money because there's fans in the stands and everything like that. You don't get anything extra. But when times are tough, we want to take stuff from you. That's not how it works.
I agree with you. I don't feel bad for billionaires. And I also, I agree with your point about how if they have all this wealth, that they should run their business and keep it afloat and not make their employees suffer. The one thing that I would kind of note with all of this, though, is a lot of teams, the majority of baseball does not make enough money to kind of get through what we're being told. Tom Ricketts has said on the conference call he had with season ticket holders yesterday that the number is 70% of revenue will be lost because of game day ops. So tickets, everything that goes on in the Wrigleyville area. If you look at the Cubs specifically, last year they're the fourth highest team in Major League Baseball when it comes to generated revenue, and that was at $471 million. 70% of that is $329 million. So if you take a look at baseball and the teams that are below the threshold of the 70% that Tom Ricketts is saying that they will lose by not playing games, there's a whole bunch of teams, almost half the league, that is below the generated revenue of $329 million. Now, I get it. Not all teams perhaps make 70% of their revenue off of game day ops.
I think the Cubs do.
I know that that's possible. And yes, I agree that the numbers that the Cubs are putting out this week, conveniently, I could see maybe having some question to it. But like, think about this. The teams below $229 million in generated revenue, it's the Seattle Mariners, Colorado Rockies, San Diego Padres, Minnesota, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Chicago White Sox, Arizona Cardinal, Arizona Diamondbacks, the Cincinnati Reds, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Toronto, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, Kansas City, Oakland, Miami. So you, let me ask you this. I get your point about billionaires and the money that they have, but you do understand cash flow, though.
No, and I get it.
And over the course of a year of not playing baseball, these teams that are below that threshold and the overhead that they have to put on their business, they probably cannot survive.
Okay.
So I get your point. And if you can't handle it, you don't want to pony up the money, sell your team.
Well, hold on.
With you.
Who can't survive? The team can't survive, or the owner can't survive in this cutthroat business of owning a sports team that he has chosen to get into?
Well,
because if you can't take it, Do the Ricketts
sure.
not have money?
Well, I'm not specifically talking about the Ricketts, because they theoretically, under this this conversation we're having, will be okay still. But it would be the teams like Baltimore, the Royals, the Athletics, the Marlins.
Didn't now, the Royals like, just sell for $1 billion?
Well, I mean, like, so then their owners should be pouring more money into the franchise.
Exactly.
Then.
They should be.
Because this is the way that I look at it, right? If a rich person owns a restaurant, and the restaurant is not making money now because it's closed because of the pandemic, and you tell your employees to come back to work, and the employees say, we're only coming back if we're making our full salaries, and the owner says, well, we can't because we're not, there's no cash coming in, therefore we have to cut you a percentage of your normal salaries until we start making the cash that we used to make. Under this situation, your solution is that rich person has to pour all of his money into the business to keep it alive. Now, that would be the noble thing to do, right?
Yes.
A billionaire helping out the people who can't get it done on their own in the business to stay alive. I get that. I totally get that.
I have a problem with the argument and your argument of the comparing this to other businesses. These are guys that have a very specific set of skills, and they do this for a living because you and I can't do it. I'm not saying anybody can go out and be a waiter the next day, but I can't throw a curveball 95 miles an hour, okay? I can't hit 400 or 300, okay? I can't hit home runs. I'm not Mike Trout. I'm not, you know, Bryce Harper. I'm not John Lester. There are a very few amount of people that are John. There's only one John Lester. There are very few amount of people that can do what those players do. And because of that, they signed multi-million-dollar deals or whatever they're put on the glasses for the Twitch people, twitch.tv, ESPN 1000 Chicago. They get paid millions of dollars for what they do. And because they have that kind of success, and they have had that kind of success, and because they are talented, they have earned that money. Okay? And I feel horrible drawing the comparison between the common man and MLB players, but they get paid millions of dollars because they are more skilled than you and I and the dude on the street, right? That's why they get paid millions of dollars. That's why they do it. And they only have a very short window to make that amount of money. Yes, it's a lot of money. I am not siding with it sounds weird to argue for millionaires. But in this situation, these guys, you can't find another Mike Trout. He's the best player in the league. He might be the best player ever, okay? You can't just say to him, well, now we're not going to pay you as much as we told you we were going to. You're already taking a pay cut. You already agreed to say, I'll only get paid when I work. That's fine. I'll only accept money for the games I am playing. We're already doing you a service by saying that. We could just say, screw you, pay us everything. But we came together and we said, we'll only get paid for the games we play. Now, it's not my fault that you can't have fans in the stands. It's not my fault that you can't sell beer and you can't get parking and you can't get money. And you know what? Ticket revenue is shared. So don't tell me about this ticket revenue BS, because everybody knows that the Royals don't sell like the Cubs do. That, you know, the Red Sox don't sell, or the Red Sox can sell where, you know, maybe the Mets can't. Okay? Or the Marlins can't. So they share revenue that way. So to tell me that, oh, it's like I'm working and I'm doing this. I get that. I understand that. I get it. We're all struggling. I get it. But these guys agreed to a contract and already agreed to take a pay cut. And to take a pay cut and say, okay, show us the books then. The billionaires won't even show them the revenue that they'll be splitting. How am I supposed to know that you're reporting all your revenue? How am I supposed to know that you're not hiding some stuff? I'm not saying you are, but if we're all going to be transparent here, show me what you got. Because until then, I've already taken a pay cut, and you find another Mike Trout. Find another Clayton Kershaw.
Okay. Here on Point Counterpoint on ESPN 1000, fair. As you started that off, Abdallah, you mentioned the skill set. And what other profession could have a skill set where you're so relied on and they're the only ones who could perform said skills? Okay, great. You have those skills. If there's no baseball season, what are you doing with those skills? You're going to go play in South Korea?
No, they have contracts. The baseball will come back.
What if teams fold?
Teams won't fold.
What if the pandemic knocks out four teams?
What teams are going to be knocked out? You sell your team. There's other billionaires.
What I'm saying is if baseball can't figure this out and they don't play games, how does anybody get paid? If no teams are making money because there is no season, how are you getting paid?
You shouldn't have bought a team.
I'm not talking about the owners. I'm talking about the players. What is the strategy? You're just going to hold out until the pandemic's over and then go back to your normal way?
Next year.
That's how it's going to work. You're just not going to play?
You're not going to pay me. I'm not going to play. If you don't pay me, we already agreed to a cut. I'm not taking more cuts.
But listen, if a company decides that they have to make more cuts to stay alive, that's just how it works. That's how it works.
Sports are different.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Yes,
they are. Not different at all.
Yes, they are. They absolutely are.
If there is no season, there is no place to use your skill set. So your skill set is useless. If a waiter can't use his skill set at the restaurant because it's not open, he can go get hired at a different restaurant.
The billionaires will lose more money than the millionaires if there's no baseball.
I don't disagree with that. I'm not on the billionaire side. I'm just pointing out that...
You sound like you are.
Nobody's going to make money if there's no baseball.
You put on your glasses, stuck your pinky out, and it sounds like you're on the side of the billionaires here, Chris.
We'll hear from Jeff Passan on this topic next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
You're very annoyed with me. Very, very annoyed with me.
Well, I mean, I guess... I mean, like, if you could just air the conversation during the commercial break, we continued debating about this the entire commercial break. I mean, I don't think you understand business.
I do.
They need money to come in to then pay their employees.
I understand
that. And I get it. They're rich guys. They should just give them their money. Just give them their money. That's not the point.
But the point is, Chris.
Okay, let me tell you. You're going to tell me that they could just sell their team.
Okay. If you don't have the money,
but if all of the owners are banned together and there is no baseball played at all, there is no revenue for anybody.
Why should they be? Why shouldn't Tom Ricketts be out there being like, if you don't like it, sell your damn team because my team's good and I want to win something this year.
Maybe he should.
My point is this, Chris. Look, sports teams are the rare thing that you can use over and over again and it only appreciates in value. If the Orioles can't make payroll because the owner doesn't have any cash flow, sell the damn team to the next billionaire who does have cash and guess what, new owner of the Orioles? Your team value is only going to go up because that's what sports teams do. They only appreciate. No teams depreciate. No teams are like, oh, we're worth less now. That doesn't happen.
I think this is a cash flow issue. Let's go to Jimmy in Burbank. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Jimmy?
Jimmy! I've talked to Jimmy a few times today.
Jimmy!
Jimmy! Crossing over, huh?
Did you call that guy?
Yes, I did. I was calling in about, but I talked to him, set up an estimate, so things are looking up, dude. So
that's
I
was awesome.
I wanted to thank you. It's a decent-sized gig, too.
All right.
As you can tell, my attitude's a little different right now than it was
that
yesterday.
That is awesome. If you guys don't know, hold on, Jimmy, let me explain. If you guys don't know,
sure.
Jimmy is the caller that called in yesterday on Waddle and Sylvie after we played the Blake Snell audio, and his family is struggling right now, and he understandably, there's no shame in it, became emotional about it, and someone called in and gave me his phone number and said, I want to hire Jimmy to paint my house. and it's like he said, it's a very nice sized ranch, and he's going to go and hopefully do this. And I mean, this the beauty of us bringing people together.
Opportunities are opportunities. It's just the way you get them, man. So I want to thank you for that, Adam. Black, first time I'm talking to you, so that's kind of cool, too.
What's up, Jimmy?
So the reason I'm calling it now was kind of to just clarify what yesterday. I am with the players, Adam. I don't, you know, it sounded like, you know, I wasn't maybe that particular moment. But, you know, I am with them, and they did negotiate to get half their salaries for half the pay, and I don't think they should have to go back to the table at all. My biggest thing was that the timing of that. You know, maybe he's going to regret that down the line. I don't know. Like I said yesterday, I don't know the man. So my point is, you know, you can't go out and say what he said. You just can't do it and then want to be looked at in a good light. I don't know if he wants to be looked at in a good light, but you just can't do it. The words that he said, you know, I got to get mine and stuff like that, when people like myself and millions of others are all but starving right now, you just can't say it. And I don't think that he was, you know, his angle was all that wrong or anything. It was the choice of words and it was the timing. And that's going to explode this into something way bigger than it probably should be. And that's what I was trying to say.
Jimmy, do you have a Venmo?
I do not. I have QuickPay, PayPal, stuff like that.
Do you watch us on Twitch?
I don't. My niece has Twitch, and I was going to start trying to like look into it, but no, I don't.
Okay, because guys in our Twitch feed are asking about you, so you should jump in. They want to contact you, right?
Very good.
All right, awesome. Thanks for calling, Jimmy.
You know,
we appreciate it, man.
I'm going to send my business card to Abdallah's Twitter, and you, Black. You
okay.
Retweet a few of my stuff,
yeah.
too. So
yeah.
I will. I'll send it over. I'll DM you guys my business card.
All right, absolutely. Thanks, Jimmy. Good luck, all right?
Awesome, guys. Thanks for letting me on again, dude. You guys are the best, and I hope you guys have a good weekend, all right?
You too, Jimmy.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Okay, so, you know, listen, I'm not against the players. I started this off by saying I feel like this has all gotten twisted. I feel like the solution is they have to play baseball. The long-term growth of the sport, you can't just sit out a year, especially with what's going on. And that's what bothers me. So if it comes down to it, no baseball or some baseball, with one of the sides having to give up a little bit more, I understand. I totally get it.
They're already giving up enough.
I get it. Yes. I get it. Billionaires, I get the whole thing. It's going to be a problem for baseball because the players are going to take all the heat if there's no baseball at all.
They shouldn't, though, because the problem is...
But that's what will happen. You have Blake Snell. You have Clayton Kershaw, who's like, I've made $200 million-plus dollars, and I don't need to play.
That's a completely different conversation, because if the baseball does come back and Clayton Kershaw doesn't want to report and doesn't want to play, then he doesn't get paid. Guess what? You don't get paid. That's
no,
fine.
I get it. And if players don't want to play, they don't want to get paid. But, I get it. But people, you made the long-term effect on the sport. If the sport makes no money this year, what do you think is going to happen next year?
Of course, I get that. But
what do you think is going to happen in free agency?
You also have to understand that if the players cave now and essentially set up a salary cap, they've gone.
Please.
They've done everything
players.
They can. That is.
I'm so sick of baseball players.
That is what's
always.
Well, you know, you're not,
it's always the baseball players.
You know, you're not sick of baseball owners. Doesn't sound like you're sick of baseball owners.
I'm sick of the whole operation.
It sounds like you're. It sounds.
How about you do this? You figure out a way to get the testing done, and you put some games on the schedule.
But that's,
both sides.
But if they come back and say, look, we're losing more money, we want you to take another pay cut. And they're like, we already are taking a pay cut. We're already taking a pay cut.
I get that. Then they should put into place that they will be able to play in 3 weeks.
But what difference does that make?
The problem with that is the moment you say, okay, the owners say, okay, we agree. You don't have to take more of a pay cut. We will play baseball. But we are starting in 3 weeks because we need to maximize the amount of revenue we can generate.
Fine.
You know what the players will come back with? Well, my arm won't be ready. I can't get ready in 3 weeks. Dude, I'm telling you right now, you're already hearing it, that the players want a full spring training. Listen, if you can't have your body right during this time, that's on you.
Players are ready to come back.
That's on you.
Players are ready to come back. Pitchers
might
need a couple weeks. You might need a couple weeks.
No, there's not a couple weeks. It's, how about this? your starter, you go two or three innings for the first couple weeks of the season.
Oh, that's fine. That's
something on TV.
That's
you need
fine
a product.
Too. That's fine,
you gotta
too.
You got to get this going.
That's fine, too. I agree with you there. If you want to do that, that's fine, too. I'm just saying you can't expect Kyle Hendricks to go out there and give you 7-8 innings in his first start if you start in 3 weeks. They need time to ramp up. That's what takes pitchers so long. The position guys are ready to go. Position guys can come in and hit a ball and stand around, whatever, that's fine.
And stand around.
Isn't that what they do?
If we go to the chat on the Twitch feed, ESPN 1000 Chicago, Chicago T-Bone says, it also looks bad that the players are saying they're risking their lives to play.
Yes,
everyone working is risking their lives for far less. And that's the part that really annoyed me. Because, listen, whatever you want to say, we're here to have fun and to talk sports. Mm-hmm. It's not that important.
Yeah.
I get it. It's what we do. I get it. But we have to come here every day. We have to see each other. We have to see other people. It's anyone going back to work is risking their lives.
Of course they are.
Technically.
Look,
people that work at the grocery stores, people that drive CTA buses. There are people risking their lives every day across the city. And I don't feel bad about, because here's the difference. We have cleaning supplies.
Mm-hmm.
The facilities are cleaned. We are ready to go. But you and I are not being tested each and every day.
Oh, you're testing me right
Sean
now.
Sean Davis is producing the show. He is not being tested every... Like, my point is, baseball players, hey, show up and make your money. No matter what that money is, I get it. You want your full paycheck. I get that. But you will be tested every single day. And if someone tests positive, we remove that person. We go forward. Like, that's the thing that bothers me is everyone's risking here.
I agree.
But baseball players are worried that they won't have their full spring training.
I agree. I agree with that. I agree that like Jimmy said when he called us, Blake Snell's message could have been conveyed in a better fashion. You know, Nolan Arenado had a great piece with Ken Rosenthal on The Athletic where he laid it out, and it was much more thought out than a dude saying it on Twitch while he's playing video game, like playing Call of Duty or whatever he was playing, okay? I agree with that. And the problem with this conversation, with them being tested and them saying they're risking their lives, is some of our lowest income people in this country are also frontline workers, but essential workers, working at grocery stores, working at meat packing plants, and working, you know, in farms, and working at trucking and all that kind of stuff. The people that are essential people that have essential jobs are still some of the lowest income families in America. And to have millionaires say that I'm waiting to get mine and we're risking our lives and the risk is crazy sounds bad. The message...
Not sounds bad. It is bad.
It is bad.
That's
it is
bad.
It sounds bad. But he's right. They've already taken a pay cut, and they shouldn't have to take another one to come back and play.
All right. We'll get to Jeff Passan next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
So in your world, just sell the team?
If you can't pay. Look, I got this super nice car. I got this, like, this old school Corvette. It's like a muscle car or whatever car people have. And I can't afford
just
to
sell the team.
I can't afford to put gas in it anymore. What am I going to do? Sell the car. Someone will buy it. And guess what? Unlike a car, teams appreciate in value.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Here with the Chicago Cubs, it's Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. We've talked about this for a few years now. There's been a question about the finances with the Chicago Cubs. World Champion Ball Club, selling all the merch, all the rooftops in the neighborhood, bought up like it's a Monopoly board, right? So you got all these revenue streams, and then you go out to try and have your own television network, which is having issues getting up and going with other companies.
Mm-hmm.
I get that the network is up and running. I can't watch it. Can you watch it
Yes.
from where you're at? You can? Okay. Good. Pretty good. Good stuff.
Yes.
Okay. I haven't seen it. Don't look at me like that. I haven't watched it yet because I don't have it on my cable provider.
I have Hulu Live, so I have access to it. Yes.
Right. Just making sure it was good programming. It's, great.
Yes. Jeez. High quality programming.
Jeez. You know, the people on Twitch can see you give me those looks. I'm just saying. I mean, I was trying to find out if it's good program. My point.
It's
the
good
point to all this is that I was under the impression that they had money. Yet we've seen over the last couple of years, the Ricketts family has kind of said in free agency that the dollars for the ball club have not necessarily been there in free agency. That's been a story we've covered here on the show for the last few years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we point to the great show Arrested Development, that there is a banana stand there with all of the money in it, but yet you can't shop in free agency.
Trying to find some money for the family.
There's always money in a banana stand.
We don't have the money, Pop.
There's money in the banana stand.
And so Michael, his son, and his brother together enjoyed the cathartic burning of the banana stand.
There was money in that banana stand.
Well, it's all gone now, Dad.
There's $250,000 lining the walls of the banana stand.
Why didn't you tell me that?
How much clearer can I say? There's always money in the banana stand!
No touching!
No touching!
No touching. And so when we look at the Chicago Cubs and we hear the number of 70% of revenue could be lost for the Cubs not playing baseball this season, you have to stop and pause and say, hold on. This team has had some questionable things with the finances the last couple of years, right?
Dude,
that's something we've covered, right?
I could understand if it's because of the Cubs. Like, normal is like 30%, right? A lot of people have said 30%. College football, maybe 40%.
Always money in a banana stand.
It holds up to, like, you can get 110,000 people into a stadium for college football. Like, the tickets are very expensive. For Wrigley, I can understand 40% because the tickets are very expensive and all the stuff is expensive. And the place is always sold out regardless of the team being good or bad. That's why Ricketts bought the team. To say that it is 70%.
Well, I mean, you have to note it, right? You have to remember it and just keep it in the back of your head because we've seen the last few years.
Listen, you and I, Chris, have known each other for almost 20 years.
There's always money in a banana stand.
Correct.
We met. We became friends. We became acquaintances. We became best friends then. Not back then, because you like to run. In Miss Gongle's algebra class.
I was so bad in that class.
So bad in that class. You know why? Because I didn't want to show my work.
Because we
did this.
Yeah.
This is what we did.
We sat next to each other.
Black and Abdallah. Alphabetical convenience. Abdallah, Black, you know, we were right by each other.
That one girl sat by us, but okay, carry on.
Clover? When you got to the days where you would get the odd questions as homework, I was like, sweet, I'm just going to write the answers down from the back of the book and get a C or get a B minus, whatever. She'd be like, why don't you show your work? I'd be like, because I didn't show my work. That's why. That's what the owners are being. The owners are being me. Why didn't you show your work? Because I don't want to. That's why. Show your work. How do you get to 70%? Because that's just an arbitrary number to me if you don't tell me.
Okay, that's great. So let's hear from your point is great. I'm just saying, let's hear from Jeff Passan. He was on Cap and Company the other day talking about this number, 70%. Here's Jeff Passan from ESPN.
As you look at how things are all set up, and we hear that the Cubs are going to lose 70% of their revenue is game day tickets and beer and parking and concessions, jerseys, and hats, and all
70%. I am calling a giant load of BS on that.
That's what I'm being told because they're getting nothing out of their TV network because it's a startup.
Yeah, that is playing with numbers right there. I'm sorry. There's just too much money that comes in from local television to ever make me think that they're getting 70%. Don't get me wrong. The Cubs are definitely on the high side, along with, you know, the teams that sell out their ballparks, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Cubs. These very successful teams do have a lot of gate revenue. But let's remember, Cap, gate revenue, quite a bit of it is shared. Like, there's a, you know, 48% of ticket sales are shared among the teams. They just get put into a pool and redistributed. That's a big part of the revenue sharing plan. So yeah, they're making money on concessions and things like that and parking, but ticket sales themselves are a pooled endeavor. And I almost think that to get to 70%, you would need to have straight up ticket sales, and that's just not the case.
And Chicago T-Bone points out.
Wait, hold on, on the chat. Huh? Did you hear that?
Whoa!
Did you hear that at the start of?
I know what that.
Whoa, baby!
I know what that music means.
Whoa!
Source off.
Okay, I don't know if you caught that. Every once in a while, you listen to things here on ESPN 1000, and then in the background of your mind, you hear it, and you hear, oh no, there are conflicting sources on a topic, a subject matter. Now listen, let's make this clear, Black and Abdallah, we don't care who's right.
I don't care who wins.
We don't care who's right.
I just want both teams.
But
to have
clearly,
fun.
There was a source off between David Kaplan and Jeff Passan the other day.
The Cubs are going to lose 70% of their revenue, concessions,
70%.
Jerseys, and all
70%.
Of it.
Oh,
70%.
Here comes Passan.
I am calling a giant load of BS.
Oh, no.
Listen.
I am calling Chicago. A giant load of BS.
Chicago T-Bone points out that the Cubs also own bars and restaurants and hotels. Now, that's true, but whose choice was it to buy those bars and restaurants and hotels? It was not the player's choice.
Yeah.
Did Anthony Rizzo go up to Tom Ricketts and say, hey,
yeah,
I got a good investment for you. Why don't you buy up all these rooftops and you can sell those tickets as well?
I am calling a giant load of BS up.
Did Cap hang up
source
on him?
Source off! No, he didn't hang up on him.
Oh, okay.
But how about that? We had a source off this week between David Kaplan and Jeff Passan.
Look, I don't care who wins the source off.
The Cubs are going to lose 70% of their revenue.
I am calling a giant load of BS up.
But I side with Passan because the numbers show your work. Show me your work.
Yeah.
Show your work.
Yeah.
Miss Gongle taught us.
Yeah.
Show your work.
Calling a giant load of BS up.
How about that?
I'll take that C+.
C+.
Yeah, C's get degrees, homie.
Source off in the wild. Jeff Passan versus David Kaplan.
The Cubs are going to lose 70% of their revenue.
I am calling a giant load of BS up.
How about that? Source off.
Take that.
Between Cap and Passan.
Take that.
Talk football next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Yeah.